Someone who'd had access to the innermost areas of the palace. Someone who could breach the security defenses because he already knew what they were, or was the person who'd put them into place to begin with. Someone like Captain Darren. Qui-Gon glanced over to where Darren worked alongside his fellow soldiers. As the captain of the Royal Guard, he could have represented himself accurately as a government official. He'd repeatedly tried to convince them not to land in the watchtower and search it. The man's commitment to his duty seemed so absolute, Qui-Gon had even sensed it through the Force. But could it all be a ruse? He betrayed none of his suspicions to Thurible. "May I ask what kind of business you are planning to do? What did they want to buy from you?" Thurible smiled, the expression a brief shadow on the wavering hologram.
"Nothing whatsoever. We were the customers."
"Then what did you want to buy from them?" Obi-Wan asked.
"We had heard rumors via some cargo hauler pilots from Corellia, who will go nameless, that the military of Pygel had developed a kind of shield that was impervious to lightsabers."
Thurible said,
"Fascinating from a scientific point of view."
The implications of this began to sink in for Qui-Gon. In theory, spice smugglers and gangsters might be able to use such a shield to protect themselves from any interventions by the Jedi.
"It takes more than blocking a lightsaber to defeat a Jedi," said Thurible. "But blocking a lightsaber helps, doesn't it? In theory."
"Enough of this," Qui-Gon decided.
"I'm afraid the issue is now purely theoretical, as Pygel has no such shields to offer."
"Such dishonesty is truly shocking. If anyone from Pygel contacts us in the future, claiming to represent the government, we'll be very certain to check them out thoroughly."
Thurible half bowed.
"Wanbo is expecting a delegation from Garrel. I trust you'll excuse me."
As soon as Thurible's hologram faded out, Obi-Wan said, "Have the Blackguards been selling these shields all around the galaxy?" Qui-Gon shook his head. "No. Not yet. But they may have been negotiating with Thurible as a sort of test, seeing how much money they could get, how much interest there might be for an anti-Jedi shield device. It's not as though we're defenseless without lightsabers. No, but if a Jedi didn't know her opponent was shielded, if she were lulled into believing her lightsaber provided protection when it didn't, it could prove deadly." Qui-Gon wondered whether Pax Marifer was about to get much better prices for Kolan crystals.
"Master,"
Obi-Wan paused, obviously doubting himself. "When Thurible said that about the legitimate government, it made me wonder. I don't want to be unfair."
"I caught it too, Padawan.
Captain Darren would have had opportunity to warn the Watchtower Blackguards about our raid, which might have led to them abandoning the place in a hurry. He tried to keep us out of here and encourage blowing up devices that might hold records." Obi-Wan added, "The Blackguards went after Zaka, the opposition, us, but never the Royal Guard." "Another excellent point."
Rising to his feet, Qui-Gon looked across the grounds of the Watchtower. Darren was hard at work, accounting for the few weapons left behind. There were multiple reasons he might want to do so.
"But, Master, he seems so loyal to the Princess,"
Obi-Wan said.
"Which he may be. We have no proof. Only suspicions. That means we'll have to watch Darren very closely."
Qui-Gon turned to his apprentice.
"I saw Darren in my vision. Of course he's playing a role in Fanry's coronation as the captain of her guard, but it's possible his appearance has a greater significance."
Obi-Wan didn't argue about the vision, which was surprising.
"I suppose we can only keep a close eye on him. At this point, yes. That's all we can do."
Captain Darren would be standing next to Obi-Wan during the ceremonies. If Qui-Gon's vision came to pass, and he knew that it would, his Padawan would be at the very center of the danger. Although Qui-Gon had recovered his faith in prophecies,
He understood better than ever before how that belief could lead to darkness. The desire to know the future sprang from a desire to control the future. The desire to control the future sprang from fear, the fear of the depthless pain and loss the future might hold. The quest for power could be overcome, but never, ever, the fear of losing what mattered most. It was difficult to speak of something so fraught, so intimate, but there might never be another time. I've been angry with you since you contacted the Council. Obi-Wan looked wary, as well he might.
That's not surprising.
On the way here, though, I realized that all these years, I'd been urging you to be more independent. To trust your instincts and act on your own initiative. That's what you did. We disagree on the particulars, but I can't fault you in principle. They both fell briefly silent while one of the security droids rolled by. It might not be programmed to monitor their conversation, but while Darren remained under suspicion, they had to be careful. Once it had traveled farther along, Obi-Wan said,
"You know, I never had problems with that as a youngling. Being independent, I mean. I broke rules right and left. They even called me rebellious. Probably the Masters were surprised anyone was willing to take me on as an apprentice."
In fact, Qui-Gon had been warned about this very thing. He'd long since assumed that the Crash Master's concern was overcautious. But now, finally, he saw what had happened. He began to laugh. Obi-Wan stared at him.
"Master?
Don't you see, Obi-Wan? They knew you'd rebel against any Master you worked with. So they made sure you wound up with a Jedi who almost never followed the rules. The only way for you to rebel was to become the perfect Jedi."
"Hardly perfect,"
Obi-Wan said, but by now, he was laughing too.
"They really did that, didn't they?"
Qui-Gon shook his head. "Never underestimate Yoda." In some ways, he knew, he and his apprentice were still far apart, on separate sides of a profound philosophical divide, with completely different understandings of the Force. But in other ways, the bond endured. Qui-Gon would have to take what comfort he could in that.
Years before.
"Relax, kid."
Rayo's hologram shimmered in the center of Qui-Gon's meditation room.
"It sounds like Dooku lost his temper, did something he shouldn't have. But really, when it comes down to it, sometimes you gotta get the job done, you know?"
"That doesn't sound right to me," Qui-Gon insisted. He hugged his knees to his chest.
"It felt worse than anger. It felt as though Master Dooku was close to darkness."
"He was scared because he was worried about you."
Rayo shrugged.
"That's another thing the Council's dead wrong about. They keep saying, oh, the Jedi aren't allowed to love, and that's why we're never supposed to get laid."
"Rayo!"
Qui-Gon felt as if somebody might walk in any second. He'd strongly hoped the meditation room would remain empty at this hour so he could speak with Rayo in private without being overheard by other Padawans, Dooku, or anyone else. Nobody but Rayo could understand the line their master walked or the dangerous allure of the prophecies. But instead of taking this seriously, Rayo was joking around and sucking a death stick in a lively cantina on some out-of-the-way planet called Takodana.
"Don't be so prim,"
Rayo insisted.
"We're not supposed to love, right? Because it makes us less objective. More likely to respond emotionally instead of rationally. But we still love our friends. We still love our masters, and they love their Padawans. I mean, somebody brings you up for 10 years, unless they're a total jerk, you're gonna love them. That's just how people are. Human people, Trandoshan people, Aqualish."
"I get it, Rayo."
Qui-Gon pushed aside his irritation to weigh Rayo Avaros's words for what they were really worth. Even if he wasn't taking this seriously enough, that didn't mean he was wrong. Rayo nodded at the person who brought his drink. a small wizened creature who wore goggles and a strand of beads.
It just makes sense,
he said more gently.
Dooku saw your life was in danger. He overreacted. But you're safe. Shenda Maul's on ice at Stygian Prime, and Dooku's back to himself again.
I don't know that he is, Qui-Gon wanted to say. The holocron of prophecies had not gone back to the archives in weeks. Dooku studied it constantly, both with Qui-Gon and without. Although Qui-Gon still liked coming up with theories about how past historical events might have fulfilled certain Master's prophetic visions, Dooku's fascination was all for the future. One prophecy in particular occupied him more than any other. He who learns to conquer death will, through his greatest student, live again.
Hey, you okay?
Sure. I should go.
Qui-Gon signed off. If he was going to work through this, it wouldn't be with Rael. He'd have to do it on his own.
He returned to Dooku's quarters that evening reluctantly. It had always been nice before, when he was invited to eat dinner with his master. Dooku made a formal occasion of it, which, like most teenage boys, Qui-Gon found awkward, but the food was always better than anything being served in the Padawan's hall. Tonight, though, the holocron would be there too, almost like a third guest, one Qui-Gon didn't want to see. He still believed in the prophecies, but his master's fixation on them had taken on an uncanny cast that colored everything else between them.
Maybe I should talk to him about it myself.
Qui-Gon thought as he walked along the corridors of the temple toward Dooku's quarters. He and Dooku were still firmly master and apprentice, not friends. Qui-Gon knew better than to assume they were anywhere near being equals. But if he didn't speak to Dooku about it, nobody would. He was still gathering his courage when the door slid open to admit him to Dooku's quarters. As usual, the table was set with good glasses and dishes, and Dooku wore one of his better robes. The only change? The holocron of prophecy wasn't there.
You're early, Dooku said with satisfaction. He approved of Padawan's being early. With a small smile, he made one of his rare attempts at a joke. You must be terribly hungry to get here so soon.
I am, but... Master, where's the holocron?
Dooku stiffened, but he continued to smile. When he spoke, his voice was more pleasant than before, or at least was meant to sound that way.
We spent too much time with it lately, I think. Gotten too caught up in our wild theories. It was enjoyable, speculating on how the prophecies might be real, wasn't it? But of course they're only metaphors, only comments on the mystic's time, not our own.
Of course,
Qui-Gon said, and he willed himself to believe it. If the price of his master's soul was refusing to accept that the prophecies might come true, then Qui-Gon intended to do it. So in the days and months and years that followed, whenever he walked by the holocron in the Jedi archives or remembered one of the quatrains late at night, he would push the thought aside. He didn't want to believe. So he wouldn't. Very, very deep down, he sometimes wondered whether anyone truly believed out of pure faith, or whether people believed whatever they had to in order to keep going. But most of the time, Qui-Gon's thoughts went no further than only a metaphor.
Chapter 35.
Avaros had never done this for anyone before. He never intended to do it for anyone again, but just this once, just for Fanry, it was worth it. He stood in front of a mirror, wearing a traditional Pajali court tunic and trousers, complete with cape, Alderaanian shimmer silk, brand new. Plain black except for the lining of the cape, which was a vivid cerulean blue. The WA-2G droid had even shaved his face, cut and styled his hair.
I look ridiculous,
Rael thought as he studied his reflection. At least that's what he expected to think, planned to think.
Am I nuts?
He asked the WA2G.
Or do I look great?
The terms are not mutually exclusive.
Rael laughed.
I just got burned by a droid. Today's gonna be fun. As long as the damn blackguards keep their distance.
Here, Your Serene Highness.
Princess Fanry held out her arm as Katie placed the thick cuff bracelet on her arm. During the ceremony, of course, it would be out of sight beneath the long sleeve of the white dress she wore. The underdress, revealed only through a few slashes of the skirt, was such a dark blue, it might as well have been black.
Thank you, Katie,
Fanry murmured. She put one hand to her curly red hair, which tumbled freely down her back.
Does this look all right? It just seems so peculiar without the scarf. It's like any other change, Katie said. It takes time to get used to it.
Fanry nodded, squaring her shoulders more like a soldier than a princess.
Today changes everything.
Obi-Wan was grateful to be spared any kind of ceremonial finery. Being a Jedi was enough. Even an apprentice Jedi would do. He had left their quarters early in the hope of examining the Celestial Chalice, but the Royal Guards had sealed the area long before.
I'm sorry, sir, said the one who stood before the inner doors in his crisp, formal uniform. It's off limits even to you, Captain Darren's orders.
As he walked away, Obi-Wan murmured,
That's just what I'm afraid of.
Qui-Gon sat on the floor of his bedroom, attempting to meditate. Calm eluded him.
Let me be wrong, he thought. Let my dream have been no more than a dream. Let the prophecies become mere metaphors once again. I would rather protect this planet, these people, my Padawan, than be granted any glimpse into any future.
But it wasn't a choice he got to make. The events today would unfold as the Force willed. Qui-Gon could only make himself ready to answer, no matter what he might be called on to do. 2 hours later, Qui-Gon prepared to enter the Celestial Chalice as part of the most honored set of guests. Minister Orth tottered up only moments after him. Her narrow-skirted brown dress required her to take many tiny quick steps. She peered at him.
I'd halfway wondered whether I'd saved your seat in vain, whether you'd boycott the ceremony in the end, or are you no longer imagining terrible visions?
My vision remains with me, he said gravely. That's why I must be here, to help in whatever way I can.
Unimpressed, she took her place by his side. In front of him, meanwhile, was a stranger in black. Qui-Gon stared.
Rael? Yeah, don't make a scene,
said the impeccably groomed, beautifully clothed person standing before him, who somehow was Rael Avaros.
It's for the coronation. The end.
My word! Minister Orth took off her pince-nez, blinked hard, then put it back on to look through it again.
Avaros! You actually look handsome!
The servant said that too. Some of the droids. A couple of guards.
Rael scowled.
That's being repeated a little too often, with a little too much surprise.
Qui-Gon managed to smile, but his astonishment had only momentarily lifted the dread. Already its weight was settling on him again.
When the vision begins to unfold, he told himself, be ready. You're exactly where you need to be.
Music began to play, and the royal guests began their procession through the grand radius of the Celestial Chalice. Sunlight filtered through the glass-domed ceiling, making all the gilding sparkle. Even the drab gray and brown robes of the Pajali seemed beautiful, subtle, gentle. And the light caught the few touches of red, gold, and violet revealed in collars or at hems. Qui-Gon took a seat behind Rael. He was relieved to see that he wasn't the only one who'd brought his lightsaber. Rael might think of it more as a ceremonial weapon today, but when action was called for, surely he would stand by Qui-Gon's side. The door of the far radius opened, and in from the grounds walked the religious leader called the Skykeeper, the crown jeweler with a wooden box in her hands, and Obi-Wan. Qui-Gon felt a moment of pride in Obi-Wan's calm composure. He carried himself as though he'd always represented the Republic, as though he had no inkling he might be walking into mortal danger. "Let me be wrong," Qui-Gon thought again. "Please let me be wrong." Finally, the music came to a crescendo, and Princess Fanry began her walk along the far radius up to the dais. Her white dress wasn't that different from her usual court attire, but it hardly mattered. Qui-Gon suspected most guests were staring at her newly revealed hair, by far the brightest color in the room. He, however, was far more interested in the fact that the person escorting Fanry to the dais was Captain Darren. "Darren's in position to strike," Qui-Gon thought. "He could kill Fanry or Obi-Wan or both faster than I could defend them." But there was still no proof Darren was the traitor. Qui-Gon looked sideways at Minister Orth, who seemed very proud of herself. Hadn't she been sneaking around the Celestial Chalice late at night, the same evening he'd had his prophetic dream? Orth was older, apparently unarmed, and wearing a dress that hardly allowed her to walk, much less fight. But who could say how many forces she might have behind her? Somewhat farther away sat Merritt Call, sector supervisor, haughty and elegant in white. Since Fanry's power would only enhance Zerka's power, Call could have no reason to attack the princess. But he couldn't be certain the vision showed an attack on Princess Fanry. It was an attack, and Fanry was there, but perhaps the violence was aimed at someone else? Like Darren? Or Obi-Wan? The Skykeeper began.
"In days of old, we Pajali traveled to outer space to feel the effortless embrace of the spirits. Now our crown princess is giving us a new way to reach the stars. Through her wisdom, through the changes she brings, she will connect us with the greater galaxy as never before."
Fanry stepped forward to accept a ceremonial sword from the Skykeeper and hold it aloft, then motioned for Darren and Obi-Wan to join her in the center of the dais. She was unafraid.
"Will you,"
the Skykeeper said,
"wield this blade to defend Pajal, to protect it from its enemies, to preserve its independence?"
"Yes," Fanry said. "I will."
Qui-Gon kept his eyes fixed on Darren, which was why he almost missed the moment that Princess Fanry stabbed the Skykeeper.
"Now, Darren!" she cried.
He pressed something at his belt that sealed the dais in the golden-orange flickering light, shielding it, Qui-Gon realized, as screams and shouts of dismay filled the room. Obi-Wan moved to help the Skykeeper, but froze when Darren pointed a blaster at his head.
"The blood," Qui-Gon thought. "The screams. The light filtering from above. It's all happening. My vision was true." Never had it been so bitter to be right.
"Fanry?"
Rael got to his feet slowly as though in shock.
"Fanry!"
"Hear me!"
Fanry shouted, and the crowd quieted. The Skykeeper had sunk to his knees, badly wounded but alive.
"They would have me sign a treaty that gives away my power. My regent and Zerka Corporation wanted nothing but profit. This treaty..."
She spat the word as though it tasted bad.
would deny me the ability to do what I should for Paito. I wouldn't be able to throw Zerka out. But I will not sign the treaty. I will not give away my power. And I will be avenged on those who would have made change impossible because they would have destroyed us.
Rael staggered to one side. Qui-Gon grabbed him by the elbow and pushed him forward.
Faint later. First help me save them.
But what could they do? Qui-Gon had realized by now that the dais had to be surrounded by one of the Blackguard shields, the ones their lightsabers would be useless against. No doubt, this was the moment the shields had been designed for in the first place. As he pushed forward through the panicky crowd, he saw Fanri activate a personal shield of her own via a bracelet hidden under her sleeve. Darren's shield was on already. Only the Skykeeper, the Jeweler, and Obi-Wan were unprotected.
Focus on what you can do instead of what you can't.
Qui-Gon turned to Rael.
Go find loyal guards if you can. Get them to close the airspace above the Celestial Chalice.
It took Rael a moment to obey, but he pulled himself together and ran for the far door.
Zerka Corporation will own Pygel no more!
Fanri shouted, motioning to Darren. Qui-Gon spotted Merrit Kahl trying to sneak farther back in the crowd only an instant before Darren fired at her. Kahl went down amid more screams. Obi-Wan tried to take advantage of the moment when Darren's weapon was pointed elsewhere, but almost instantly, Darren had him in his sights again.
Princess Fanri, please wait!
Orth tottered forward through the ozone scent of blaster fire with a courage that made Qui-Gon reevaluate her.
You don't know what you're doing. You're hardly more than a child.
A child?
The princess's voice rose almost to a shriek.
There are queens my age on Naboo, princes my age on Toydaria. Alderaan's queen took Princess Bria to help her negotiate a treaty, and she's younger than I am. And I've seen how Zerka strangling Pygel when my elders haven't. Don't lecture me about being a child.
Fanri collected herself.
You're honest, Minister Orth. For that reason I spare you. But doubt me no longer.
Qui-Gon breathed in, breathed out, drank in what calm he could, connected himself as fully as possible to the Force. Then he examined the room with fresh eyes. Security alarms ought to have been blinking frantically, but they remained silent. No doubt Captain Darren had deactivated them. No troops had yet entered this room, despite the fact that they were massed outside. That meant the army must be loyal to Fanri, or at least to Darren. And the sunlight overhead no longer streamed through, but had become spotty, as though the sky were filling with clouds. Or...
You've taken bribes from Zerka for years,
Fanri said to the fallen Skykeeper.
Let them use sacred docks that should be reserved for the Soulcraft?
The Skykeeper clutched his bloody shoulder.
Your Serene Highness, I... Keep your lies to yourself,
Fanri said, turning from him to the shivering court jeweler.
Oh, honestly, calm down. You're fine.
The jeweler continued trembling as Fanri opened the box, took out a small circlet, and put it on her own head. Qui-Gon worked his way closer to the dais, pushing through the throngs of people rushing out. Yet a large part of the crowd remained, watching out of either morbid fascination or perhaps even support for Fanri. He tried to catch Obi-Wan's gaze, but his Padawan remained focused on Darren, clearly hoping for one more chance to defend himself. It didn't look like he would get one.
I must try,
Qui-Gon thought. He leapt forward, igniting his lightsaber. The instant his feet hit the ground, he swung his weapon into the glowing perimeter of the shield. Green blade crackled against orange light, reverberating so hard that the bones in his arms and shoulders seemed to shudder. The lightsaber was useless.
Jedi Jin!
Fanri half turned to look at him.
You alone argued against the treaty. You alone refused to sit tamely at Zerka's feet. Therefore, you will be spared.
Karabast, if I'd been the one on the dais instead of Obi-Wan, he'd be safe instead.
But you...
The princess, or now that she wore the crown, the queen, craned her neck back toward Obi-Wan.
You supported this evil treaty. You thought to make me sign it. There will be no mercy for you.
Fanry, no! Qui-Gon shouted. She gestured to Darren. The captain grimaced. In horror, Qui-Gon realized. But he said only,
"As my queen wishes it."
The rest happened in what most humans would have seen only as a blur, which only Qui-Gon's focus through the Force allowed him to witness clearly. Darren raised the blaster. Obi-Wan ignited his lightsaber, even if it would do no good. His lightsaber was no longer blue, but orange. And when he swung it, the blade easily passed through Darren's shield. Into Darren. The captain gasped in pain, then crumpled backward to the floor, moaning as he clutched his bleeding abdomen. Fanry shrieked. Obi-Wan wheeled about to again put himself between the sword-wielding queen and the wounded Skykeeper. Qui-Gon tried to understand what had taken place, what happened to Obi-Wan's lightsaber. Overhead, the glass panes that formed the dome of the Celestial Chalice began to retract. The gathering shadows proved themselves to be troop ships of the Royal Guard, hovering overhead. Someone cried, "Your Majesty, the shield generator!" Qui-Gon realized it had been Katie, who seemed to have known about this all along. Queen Fanry grabbed a small device from Darren's belt only a moment before cables dropped from the troop ship snaked down into the chalice. Katie grabbed one, Fanry seized another. Qui-Gon considered taking a third, but the soldiers would sever his line before they'd let him ascend to the top.
"Farewell, Darren."
Fanry looped the cable's harness around her body. She and Obi-Wan stared at each other for a long moment before she was hauled upward. The shield, Qui-Gon thought, afraid its border would slice through Obi-Wan. But the generator proved to be compact. The orange shield faded as Fanry took it with her upward, out of range, beyond the roof of the chalice. Katie rose just beside her on her own cable. Everyone in the chalice stared upward except for Qui-Gon, who hurried to his apprentice's side. Obi-Wan kept staring at his orange lightsaber until he turned to his master and said,
"What the?"
"It's a revolution from the top," Qui-Gon replied. "Rael thought he was defending Fanry. Zerka thought they were manipulating her. But she was more than they counted on."
"But what does Fanry intend to do now?"
Obi-Wan shook his head, trying to focus.
"We're about to find out," Qui-Gon said.
Chapter 36. Until a few moments earlier, the flagship of the Royal Fleet had been known as the Heavenly Sphere. As of today, by Queen Fanry's order, it was called the Righteous. As she strode through the ship's corridors, strapping on an armor-weave breastplate over her now-stained white gown, she called out,
"Who's in command of the leverage? Who's taking over now that Call's dead?"
Katie had already changed into a Blackguard uniform. A line across her left hand showed where the 2-1-B had freed her permanently of Zerka just minutes before. She was alight with triumph, even happier about this than Fanry was herself.
"I regret to inform Her Majesty that Merrick Call survived the ceremony."
"What?" The one person Fanry most wanted dead, the most corrupt and soulless of them all, had slithered free of the trap. When she realized what had happened, she swore.
"Darren, he spared her, didn't he?"
"He was a good man," Katie replied. "He just didn't understand that these Zerka scum have to die.
But we do."
Fanry strode toward the Bridge of the Righteous. She had studied all her life to be a ruler, had been preparing for this moment for years. Avaros had only seen a child when he looked at her, but that was because he only ever really saw Nimpiana. Fanry could pity that poor wretch, the girl she'd never met, but knew she would not share Nim's fate. No, she had at last fulfilled her destiny and become the only thing she ever aspired to be. The Warrior Queen. Rael Avaros had let Obi-Wan Kenobi guide him onto the Corellian Corvette. It didn't seem to much matter where he went or what he did.
Fanry, why?
He tried to imagine asking her, but the scene refused to take shape in his head. Avaros could no longer see the clever, funny little girl he'd known, or thought he'd known. Instead, when he spoke the words in his mind, the person listening was the angry, contemptuous young woman who had today seized absolute power. Padawan, Qui-Gon was saying to Obi-Wan as they all walked onto the Corvette's bridge. What happened to your lightsaber?
I'm not sure. Obi-Wan unscrewed the components of his lightsaber. To everybody's astonishment, this revealed an orange colon crystal where the kyber crystal ought to have been.
How is this possible?
Qui-Gon asked.
It has to be.
Obi-Wan's expression became thoughtful.
A few days ago, Fanry asked to know how a lightsaber worked, and I showed her. Darren told me before the run-through last night that no weapons were allowed in the chalice until the ceremony itself, so I left my lightsaber in the hall outside. Then someone sabotaged it, or meant to.
The wait, Avaros said dully. They stole your kyber crystal and replaced it with colon so it would stay the same weight and keep you from catching on.
Slowly, Qui-Gon began to smile.
Fanry and Darren thought the colon crystals were useless, except as a way to fool Obi-Wan. But the crystals were able to project a sort of blade, even if it was less powerful, except, that is, against shields also powered by colon.
Thank the Force it's less powerful, Obi-Wan said. If it weren't, my blow would have killed Darren.
Hell, you'd have cut him in two,
Avaros replied. After a brief pause, Qui-Gon nodded.
And I should imagine the potential black market for these shields will dry up as soon as it becomes known the Jedi have a way to cut through them after all.
Obi-Wan tucked his lightsaber back into his belt, but then hesitated.
I'm assuming we can get my kyber crystal back. It's probably still in the palace somewhere, right?
Probably.
Avaros said. Even to him, his voice sounded dead.
Are you sure she's queen?
Qui-Gon said as the Corvette headed into deep space in pursuit of blackguards and a Fanry. The ceremony wasn't completed.
I'll say.
Avaros leaned his head back against the shining white back wall and focused on the array of lights on the bridge so he wouldn't have to pay attention to what was on the viewscreen.
But yeah. As soon as a consecrated crowd of Paijo lay on her head, Fanry became queen. And since she didn't sign the treaty, the old rules are still in place, which means she's got absolute power.
From the sound of it, one of Fanry's first orders would be for his exile, or execution.
Good news, Obi-Wan said, looking up from a comm panel. Apparently Captain Darren's going to live. At least he can explain some of this afterward.
Assuming the rest of us live, Avaros said.
Qui-Gon gave him a look, and Avaros wondered if he was about to get a lecture about being defeatist. Better that than what he did get.
Rael, did you never see any sign of this?
No. Yes. I mean, now that I think about it, I feel this energy in her through the Force. This determination to rule. Just figure that meant she was mature, but it looks like there was more to it than that. He sighed. And she never did cozy up to Zerka. Never figured out that I was only cozying up to them for her. And she kept that girl Katie close to her, or to me, pretty much all the time. At the time, I figured Katie was just her favorite. But now, she's looking like her partner in crime. Maybe so, Qui-Gon said, though Katie may simply be following her owner's orders. But I sensed hope within her, not resignation. So half the palace knew the real Fenri this whole time, Avaros thought, but not me. Okay, he said, pulling himself together, or as close to it as he was going to get. What do we do now?
It looks as though the royal ship, the Righteous, is heading for an assault on the Leverage, said Obi-Wan. He frowned down at the array of schematics lit up on the consoles around them.
They've pulled in other royal or blackguard vessels to help. Though I guess the blackguards were royal all along.
Here's what we'll do,
said Qui-Gon as calmly as though he'd had this plan for years.
Rael, you and I need to board the Righteous and take custody of Fenri. Rael laughed. The sound was strange in his throat.
Arrest her? For what? She's got absolute power now. Doesn't matter what she does. It's the law.
Qui-Gon shook his head.
The Queen has absolute power in the Pygel system. However, she has no power that protects her from the crime of attacking a designated representative of the Republic.
With that, he nodded at Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan didn't seem as confident. Surely killing several thousand Zaka people counts as a pan-galactic offense.
It does, Qui-Gon said. But Zerka sometimes takes initiative and pursues those who've committed crimes against the corporation. They claim to handle such matters without help from the courts, but sometimes they wreak a bloody vengeance. I have no doubt they would hear. Zerka must not be the authority to step in. It must be the Republic.
Even though they had to do something, it still hurt Avaros to think of arresting Fenri.
Speaking of Obi-Wan, where's he gonna be? He's going to be boarding the Leverage, both to keep Zerka from taking any punitive steps and to liberate an associate of ours, said Qui-Gon.
The Leverage's security is tight, Avaros said, like tighter than the Galactic Senate's. How do you think you're going to get in there without being spotted?
Qui-Gon smiled.
As it happens, we have a ship with a scanner blocking field and an operative ready to help us take it inside the Leverage itself.
Pax Marifer had never felt good about the Jedi's plan. Not because he didn't think it would work, it seemed to have a decent chance of success, but because he hadn't come up with it. Obviously, his plan would have been far superior had he ever devised one. But his objections had become both more numerous and more pointed as Coronation Day wore on. First, according to the comms, the coronation hadn't gone off at all, with the young queen revealing herself as some sort of power-hungry zealot. It sounded quite exciting, and Pax looked forward to watching the many dramatic holovids that would undoubtedly be made about it. Then, in the wake of that fiasco, the Leverage had gone on high alert. It would have been difficult enough to slip through Zerka security on a normal day, but on high alert? And the cover for their rescue mission was meant to be provided, at least in part, by masses of Pajali people taking their personal ships into space to celebrate the day. Didn't sound like much celebration was in the offing. Which meant not only that Rahara was still trapped in that Zerka behemoth, but also that he now had no way to get her out again. The comms chimed, startling Pax out of his cockpit reverie. He opened the channel.
Kenobi! Is that you?
It's me, Obi-Wan said.
He sounded far happier than the situation called for.
We're changing the plan.
Obviously, though I've no idea how you expect to breach
rendezvous with our Corvette.
That was Qui-Gon Jinn's voice coming through now.
Obi-Wan can transfer to the Merricks then. After that, I'll provide a diversion to distract the leverage while you slip through.
Pack squinted suspiciously.
What sort of diversion?
You'll see.
With that, Qui-Gon signed off.
How like a Jedi. Cryptic to the last. But the annoyance was empty. Mere reflex from his mind. Inside, Pax only cared about one thing. Rahara would get another chance.
The rendezvous took only minutes. Obi-Wan practically vaulted on board, and Pax Marifer had blasted back into space the literal second the atmospheric shield dropped. As soon as Qui-Gon got confirmation that the Merricks was away, he gestured to the Corvette's comm officer.
Signal the leverage. Inform them that the Jedi Qui-Gon Jinn wishes to speak to whoever's in charge.
Moments later, a hollow flickered into shape on the bridge, revealing the face of Merrit Kahl.
Jedi Jinn, she said, tucking the lock of hair back into her elaborate hairstyle, or what remained of it. Well, that was unexpected, wasn't it?
You have a gift for understatement, Supervisor. Qui-Gon assumed a look of the deepest concern. We thought Captain Darren had killed you.
No. Singed me, yes.
She gestured with irritation to a black mark on her white jacket.
Official supervisor formal wear isn't cheap, you know.
Zerka charged its own people for their uniforms? That was not surprising, actually. Qui-Gon said,
I felt I should inform you that the Queen's ship, the Righteous, appears to be planning an attack on your vessel.
Kahl held on to her temper, barely.
Really? The Queen, who just proclaimed my employer to be evil and had her captain attempt to murder me at her own coronation? She might attack me? How very shocking! Thank you for this entirely unpredictable news.
Out of the corner of his eye, Qui-Gon could see Obi-Wan's tracker getting closer and closer to the leverage. The Merricks itself, with its scanner-blocking field activated, was as invisible to him as it was to the leverage.
I can't be sure of this, he said, but it's possible that the Righteous carries some sort of advanced weapon. Something purchased on the black market from the Hutts some time ago. We can definitely confirm that her blackguards were in contact with Wanbo the Hutt's cartel on Teth.
This was all entirely true. Of course, there was absolutely no reason to think Fanry's ship had any such weapon, but it was possible.
The Hutts?
Kahl motioned to someone off hollow.
Quick, turn off scanners on the Righteous, full strength!
Qui-Gon resisted the urge to smile as Obi-Wan's tracker zoomed up to the leverage and disappeared inside it. Obi-Wan held his breath as the Merrick slipped into an auxiliary cargo bay of the leverage, the kind of place that should be controlled by autosensor and empty of sentience or droids. If Qui-Gon had succeeded in drawing Merrit Kahl's full attention...
We're clear,
he said with a grin as the Merrick settled into a repulsor berth where it would rest in midair. Once the bay doors close, we can set out in search of Rahara. The palace records provided a couple of diagrams here on the scanner, so we ought to be able to find her.
Correction, said Pax Marifer, who was rolling up the sleeves of his overlarge blue shirt. I ought to be able to find her. You, on the other hand, are going to wait here so you can get us clear of the leverage the first moment possible. If I'm with you, that wouldn't put off our departure by more than a minute or two. Which, given the situation, is a terrifyingly large margin of error and therefore unacceptable.
Pack straightened up and ran his hands through his wild hair, rendering it messier than ever.
It's also possible another diversion may be needed, one your master won't be able to provide while he's confronting the Queen.
Obi-Wan would much rather have been in the thick of things, but what Pax said made sense.
All right then. I'll wait here.
but take this with you.
He handed Pax a scanner, complete with schematics and a comlink. Let me know what you can when you can. The leverage bay door shut. Pax immediately went for the exit.
As I said, be ready!
Qui-Gon reached out with the Force, attempting to scan the Righteous. Reading a large area was difficult, particularly when many people were within it. But he wanted only to get a sense of whether the entire crew supported Fanry's quest, or whether they felt trapped by duty. He picked up veins of both sentiments, yet found it impossible to determine which was stronger.
Are you ready?
He said to the captain of the Corellian Corvette. The captain nodded.
It's going to tax us to the limit, but we can do it.
With that, the Corvette locked its tractor beam on the Righteous. As soon as the Queen's ship realized its predicament, it began attempting to pull away. Although the Corvette shuddered from the resistance, it remained stable. The beam didn't break.
Signal the Righteous, Qui-Gon said. Tell them it's time to talk.
As the comm officer did so, the security chief straightened.
The Righteous is powering up weapons!
The Nautilin must have been a civilian worker, not a soldier, because his tentacles trembled at the thought.
Get closer!
It was the first thing Rail had said in hours that was tactical rather than reactive.
Make it obvious that if she blows us up, we'll take her with us.
Qui-Gon frowned. That sounded dangerously vindictive. But it was a valid tactical move. Rail's maneuver worked. It wasn't long before the comm officer reported.
The Righteous wants to talk to us!
Very well.
Qui-Gon straightened his robe and folded his hands together in front, so that the sleeves draped over them.
Be in this moment, he thought,
willing his spirit to achieve the same calm strength as his body. The hologram that shimmered into being on the Corvette's bridge was far larger than the one projected by the leverage. This was a royal vessel, and the effect was meant to be one of a royal audience. Queen Fanry appeared, slightly larger than life, flanked by a heavily armed honor guard, and in the back, wearing a soldier's uniform rather than the usual gray coverall, stood Katie. To his eyes, Fanry looked transformed. She wore the ceremonial sword at her side and a silvery breastplate over her gown, and her freed hair blazed like fire. But none of that altered her as greatly as the confidence and fury that shone from her like a light. This, he understood, was the first time he'd ever truly seen her.
If I tried to see her before, Qui-Gon realized, the Force would have shown me some of the spirit she hid inside. But I didn't try. I took her for the child she presented herself to be.
There was no Jedi so wise that he could not be undone by his own assumptions.
We welcome the chance to speak with you, Jedi Jin, said Fanry. Our former regent is less welcome, but as we have granted truce to you, we will honor it for him.
Rael rasped out the words.
Fanry, why?
Despite the finery he wore, the shaven face, Rael Avaros had never looked more derelict to Qui-Gon than he did at this moment.
Didn't you ever see? The only reason I ever worked with Zerka was to make things easier for you. That every damn thing I did was only ever for you!
It was never for me.
Fanry lifted her chin, spearing Rael with her gaze.
It was for Nim. Everything you did was for her. You never stopped to ask yourself if the things a wounded child might have needed were the same as the things a future queen would need. You protected me when you should have taught me. You talked at me when you should have listened to me.
Qui-Gon didn't even have to look at Rael to know what he felt now. The horror of it was so strong, it resonated in the Force. The horror sprang from Rael's knowledge that Fanry was right. At least about this.
Your Majesty, Qui-Gon said, this isn't primarily a chance for you and your former regent to talk over old times.
It's a chance to discuss whether you're willing to stand down and come up with a diplomatic solution. The Republic was already attempting to find ways for your people to cast off Zerka's influence.
By taking away my absolute authority? Though really, the more I studied my history, the more I realized no monarch of Pyjal had truly ruled in centuries. Zerka's grip has been too strong. I need the full authority of the throne Jedi. The Republic is compromised by Zerka's wealth and influence. Only I can free my world.
Qui-Gon had doubted that Pyjal's future assembly would be able to stand up to Zerka. Could he be certain the Galactic Senate would do any better? Yet he remained on his path, attempting to appeal to Fanry's reason.
With the future of the hyperspace corridor on the line, your bargaining position has only grown stronger. Will you negotiate? Will you help us find a peaceful solution?
I've seen the cost of peace.
Fanry's eyes glittered with a febrile, angry light.
I prefer war.
Chapter 37.
Zerka's ships are as labyrinthine as their bureaucracy, thought Pax Marifer. How very unsurprising. Thus far, he'd been able to sneak through a good third of the leverage's length, and had gone down one level to what he thought would be the slave-holding area. It had taken more time than he would have liked. The Zerka corridors were enormous, 3 meters high by almost 5 meters wide, and twisted and turned as though determined to find the least direct route to lead anywhere. In Pax's opinion, the design aesthetic must have been intestinal. A mouse droid rolled by, singing to itself. Pax remembered what B-3PO had always taught him.
If a human behaves as though they belong somewhere, less complex droids will assume the human does belong.
He strolled past it without any pause on either side. Once he rounded the next turn, the eerie hush turned into the clatter of work. Droids beeping, machinery moving, the distant tenor of human conversation. Pax sighed in relief. He'd made it as far as the labor area. He tugged on the maintenance jacket and hat he'd swiped from the auxiliary bay, took a deep breath, and walked into the thick of it. The corridor opened up, becoming a broad walkway that looked down onto the factory area. Rahara had told him this area was called the Pit by those who had to work in it, and the name was well earned. It was poorly lit, too hot, and cramped. Enslaved beings wearing dingy coveralls oversaw machines that clanked so loudly they must have caused hearing loss within months. Bursts of steam occasionally came up from some of the machines, very nearly scalding those working nearby.
Just find Rahara, he told himself as he began to descend a service ladder into the pit. Find her and run.
The Righteous's weapons remain fully charged, said the anxious Nautilin security officer to Qui-Gon and Rael. Fanry's hologram had only just faded away. But they seem to be shifting their targeting.
Only one other target was possible. The leverage. Qui-Gon breathed in sharply. Obi-Wan was far from the only person aboard that ship who wasn't part of Zerka. Was Fanry truly so angry at the company that she would destroy them, even if it meant also destroying innocent lives? He turned to Rael, whose expression had become hard and set. The question was unnecessary.
She'll do it, Rael said. Now that I'm thinking about it, going over what I knew about her before and what I know about her now. Yep. She'll take him down to hell no matter who has to go along for the ride.
Was it all a dream? Rahara thought dully as she stamped down the compressor lock, pushed the unit forward, and did it again
and again. Was I just imagining I was free? That I used to be a jewel thief and go all around the galaxy with diamonds and opals and crystals?